This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is continuing coverage of the case against Lori Vallow Daybell from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Well, you may have seen it, you may have not, but Lori Vallow Daybell gave a post-trial interview to True Crime Arizona, and we're going to watch it on today's episode of the program. I got to get the Karen Reed graphic down from the back because a little Dawn of the Daybell. There we go. Dawn of the Daybell. So much Karen Reed recently. So we're going to go through this. Let's take a watch. This is the same group and individual who interviewed her right before the verdict. I think it was right before the trial started. Went in, and that's where we heard a lot of very interesting things about Lori's thoughts on why she's there and her divine mission now behind the cell walls and being there.
She's
with
got thoughts.
She's got thoughts. So let's take a look. Here we go. Lori Vallow Daybell. This is from True Crime Arizona. And they're reporting. Let's watch what she has to say. It's kind of amazing how competent she can be and then as crazy as she can be.
Okay. Kind of goes with the territory, though, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I'll make sure everything's kind of squared up. Perfect. You got enough room?
Do they give her a curling iron, or is that natural curl?
I think she uses toilet paper rolls.
It's been an interesting 2.5 weeks.
Has it only been that long?
Yeah.
Has
it been like feels a little longer, I would say.
Yeah, it went fast.
It went fast. Mm-hmm. Guilty. Did you expect that?
No.
Not at all?
I mean, obviously I knew that's a possibility, yeah. So it was a bit of a surprise, actually.
What made you surprised that it went that direction?
I mean, I shouldn't be surprised knowing what I know about the judicial system and how it works. So it still was. Just you were there, so
I was.
From what happened, I was surprised at that outcome.
And we didn't really see any noticeable reaction from you or really anybody else in the courtroom when that verdict was read. When you did hear it, what was your first thought?
So it's not a secret that I had a near-death experience, right? I talked about it at my sentencing. And when you have that experience and you go to the other side of the veil, you understand, you have a life review. You see your whole life, everything that happened to you. And you see what's important and what's unimportant. And you see what matters in life. So what matters in life is how you react to things, how you treat other people, and the love that you give while you're here on Earth. And that's it.
You killed people!
So you felt reacting was the best call in that moment?
No, I felt like I should have joy in every situation, which is what I was taught to do in heaven. So
you had a list of witnesses you could call. Your parents, your sister, even your brother again. But you chose not to. And I think you resting without calling anybody was a surprise to everybody who had been following the trial. What went into that decision?
So did you read any of the motions that were filed precluding my sister and my mother from speaking about certain subjects?
Some of them, yes.
And then did you read any of the motions that were precluding me from asking certain questions to the law enforcement?
Yes.
So, and did you see all the people that they struck from my witness list?
Yes.
Okay, so
who did that leave you with?
That's what I'm saying. In the judicial system, the way that it works is they really don't let you put on a defense. They just don't. They don't let you put on your defense the way that you want to present it. So you think, and this is what I thought too, because you're naive when you go into it, right? Like, I didn't know, as 46 years old, the first time I was ever arrested, I didn't know how the system worked, I didn't know any of that. So you think they get to tell their side and you get to tell your side. And you think that's the way that it works, and it doesn't. It doesn't work that way at all.
It's all lies.
And in a high profile case like this, there's money and jobs and things that are going on way behind the scenes that nobody sees. I mean, what you saw, it's even interesting. So think about this. What you saw, how many different things did you see than what the jury saw? Because you see the arguing of motions. You see all the things that the prosecutor's saying behind the scenes, and they don't get to even see any of that. So it's the way that the system works, and it's what it does. And so, yeah, they precluded me basically from having a defense. They precluded you from talking about the things that would be most important to prove your case. So if the judge precludes all those things, what are you supposed to get up and say?
I guess in your case, though, you could have testified.
That's true.
Why not?
So there's a lot of reasons. The way that the system works, if I were to really explain, because now it's being behind the scenes of the system, I mean, obviously you see things.
Oh, she's the expert.
It's very interesting what the state is allowed to do. So if you put on any kind of a case, okay, any kind of defense, one person, like one detective, say the detective Moffat that they didn't put on the stand, right? I really wanted to put him on the stand.
You wanted to cross-examine him.
Well, he was the case agent for the first, you know, year and a half or something like that. So he's the one that talked to everybody. He's the one that found out all the information. And they didn't put him on at all. And I think that was because of the exhibits that I was proposing were mainly of him, right? So they didn't put him on at all because they didn't want me to cross-examine him on the stand. So if I put up anybody, if I put up one person, then they get to put on a whole nother case after that. They get to put on a rebuttal case after that. So they can, and I think this is like the MO of the state. So this is how trial works. Like they put on their case and then you put on your case and then they can go back and put on a whole nother case. Like they kind of save it for the end. And so there's strategy involved and there's, you know, I think of couples retreat. You know, I'm a big movie buff, so I think of things. And I think I've studied yoga and Tai Chi and the art of war. I mean, that's kind of like, it's crazy what really is going on behind the scenes.
So you didn't want Trina Kay to get back up there and present a lot more after if you were to have testified?
I didn't do it for that purpose. I just knew that is a possibility.
We were talking to the jurors after the verdict, and they had a lot of interesting things to say. One of them.
I would be really interested to hear what they said. I didn't get to hear any of that, so I've been sleeping.
So one of them thought not guilty until closing arguments. Do you feel like you did not do enough in closing arguments to have convinced that juror to keep that decision?
I don't think that it was my job, really, to convince them. I was just trying to present it from my side, you know?
A lot of them had the same questions that we thought. So, just to kind of bring you into what affected them the most.
Sure. I'd love to hear that, actually.
So all of them sat there wondering, where is Tylee? She's in the body camera footage.
Right.
Why is she not testifying? And they felt that there was a part of the story missing, which they didn't know about your previous convictions, but they were correct.
Did they not know?
They did not know. According to them, they did not know. And they shouldn't have known based
they
on
should
how
have
should.
Known. And it was weird, right? Because it seemed like Trina Kay was talking around Tylee without talking directly about her, you know? So I'm sure that was confusing.
Would you have wanted the jurors to know that she's dead?
I was precluded from giving out that information. So that's the way the law works, right? We were both precluded. So that made it very awkward, don't you think?
But let's say you weren't. Would you have preferred the jurors to know that Tylee was dead?
They had to have known she was dead.
I don't know that.
They didn't.
I think they obviously did know.
Well, they said they learned afterwards. So as they were coming out, people were saying, you can now look up the case. So they were Googling things and they're seeing all these prior convictions.
So you didn't think that happened during deliberations? Like maybe one person informed all of them that that was the case?
I won't know.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know. I'm not saying I was there.
But they were upset when they found out that Tylee and JJ are both dead. For you, seeing Tylee on the video, I mean, what was that like for you? You were convicted in her death, but we're seeing video of her in that courtroom.
Well, I understand where Tylee is in heaven. I know what she's doing.
Oh, shut up.
And I know where she is. And so it's been
she's at CBS.
6 years since she passed away. I mean, this is the catalyst, right? What happened with her and Charles was the catalyst of her killing herself. So
she's going back to her killing herself.
I was precluded from bringing that up.
But the detectives obviously don't say that she killed herself.
I'm aware of what the detectives say, but
are
they
you?
Weren't there.
So that's what actually leads me to my next question on this. So I know last time you said that there was a domino effect in our last interview that was kind of the cause or the result of all of these deaths of people. And when I asked you about it more, you said, I'll save that for next time. So here we are. What do you mean by domino effect? And was the catalyst of that Chad Daybell?
So because I still have my appeals and another trial coming up, right? I don't really necessarily get into the details of it, but yeah, it was a domino effect, one that I was not prepared for. Like, what happened with Charles that day, between Tylee and Charles that day, had been building for months. They had been getting into these fights, and I had to separate them physically twice. Tylee and I stayed in a hotel twice to get away because she was pushing his buttons like only a teenager can, you know? And when that happened that day, I mean, that's what I was precluded from discussing. I was precluded from talking about what led up to this incident, why it was so intense in those few minutes, why things happened like they happened. And so it was hard for me. It's hard for me to not be able to talk about that. It's not be hard for me to be able to say what actually happened. It's so hard because you think you're going to be able to get up and just tell what happened, and that's not the way the law works. It's not the way it's written. So nobody gets to do that, you know? I'm in here with these women that have these family tragedies, too, and they're family tragedies.
All family tragedies.
Happen. And they're precluded from telling the story. You're precluded from telling that in court, and the jury never gets to see that. So, and you see all the things that the jury doesn't get to see. I mean, they get very limited information. I mean, you saw how everything I tried to say, Trina Kay's like, she can't say that, she can't say that, she can't say that, you know. And so, not being a lawyer, you know, and trying this, you know, myself, like, I was always surprised, like, okay, well, I guess you can't really tell your side of the story ever. Like, I guess this is
yes,
not
you
how
can.
Poor Lori.
I know with our interview, you referenced a family tragedy, and that was something that we heard in your opening and your closing arguments.
Right, absolutely.
But that phrase bothered a lot of people who know what happened in a totality, right?
Who knows what happened in totality besides me?
Well,
who was there?
I think everybody who's seen that you've been convicted of now
wrongly convicted, yes.
So if you say that you were wrongly convicted of the deaths of your children,
yes,
who killed them?
So you know from my interview with Colby that
Nephi.
I told him what really happened. And so that's just what happened.
Can you put that into your own words here?
I could, but I would probably save that for my next trial. So.
Ooh, she's smarter than Karen
Reed.
I want
to ask you about the testimony. Obviously, this was your first time.
She actually is in that.
You're not an attorney.
Yes. Holy crap.
What was that like cross-examining people for you, getting up there and having to be able to put into words your questions properly? You got a lot of objections and kind of had to revamp there on the spot. Right. What was that like for you?
It's harder than it looks.
Sure.
It's harder than it looks. It's stressful in a way. Like, you're brain has to be going 100 miles an hour. You know, I've been in jail for over 5 years, almost 6 years, so you don't really have to use your brain very much in jail. So it was like Mathlete or something, you know, you're having to think all the time. So it was interesting. It was different than I thought it was going to be. It's difficult.
What was it like facing your brother for the first time in years?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, it all happened so fast. I'm still really kind of processing. I mean, yesterday was the first day I slept in like 3 weeks or so. So today I slept into a little bit. I knew you guys were coming. I was like, I better get up because, you know, I knew you guys were coming. But it was different than I thought.
Did you think that your interactions with Adam were positive between the two of you in the courtroom?
I didn't really think anything at the time. I was trying to be in just lawyer mode and kind of do my job at the time. You know, it's hard because you have, being your own attorney, right? You're obviously emotional, and women were obviously more emotional than the men who get up and do it. But I tried to mostly be in attorney mode and try to stick to that.
Well, and that's an interesting point, because I think the difference that we saw with you versus if you had an attorney was sometimes there were personal aspects. For example, the green chili chicken enchiladas. That became a huge part of this that I don't think anybody had on their bingo card that was going to be part of this trial.
Right.
But obviously an attorney would not have started going into that. Why bring that up? And what was that interaction between you and Adam like?
So, I don't know. I mean, it was different when it was up there with him because, you know, you've known him your whole life. You know, I was going to come in and say, you know, I'm funny. I'm always doing movie lines. Our whole family is like that. We're big on movie lines. Like Summer and I will text back and forth in total movie lines without any words ever that are our own, you know, just quoting back and forth. And so I wanted to come in and ask Adam, who is Ernest T. Watson? And see what his reaction would be. Because there's no way he couldn't laugh, you know.
No, but he seemed annoyed on the stand.
Yeah, well, he would laugh because that was the name that he called himself when we used to play school when we were little growing up. That was like his nerdy name for school when we played school. So I thought that would be funny. But I was trying to be, I mean, it's obviously a serious situation, but it's hard with my own family to be serious because we're really a joking family. And so
you're on trial for murdering your husband.
Though now?
Not really necessarily.
Okay.
Yeah.
That kind of the personal part of this, I want to touch on a little bit more of that in the testimony. So it seemed from a totality standpoint that some of the testimony that bothered you the most was talking about Charles dating other women, specifically with Nancy Jo Hancock, but you also referenced it in your cross-examination of Detective Duncan. Why did that aspect bother you so much?
I don't think it bothered me that much. I think it surprised me. Because I wasn't aware of any of that until we got the discovery.
You did not know he was dating other women?
No. No.
But you were having the affair with Chad Daybell, so how does that
You can work? Say affair, but Chad was really just my best friend.
At the time?
Yes.
But then you got married a few months later.
Later, correct.
So you were just friends, according to you, with Chad before Charles' death?
Correct.
And then only romantic things started after Charles' death?
Correct.
Do you still to this day believe that Charles was a dark spirit, a possessed spirit named Ned?
That's a whole thing that has been way misconstrued.
So. Can you clear it up?
Probably not in the 5 minutes we have left.
Again, she's smarter than Karen.
Obviously, I have to ask, right? Because so much centered around the religion part of this, including these Nephi texts. The Nephi texts, I think, became possibly the crux of this trial, and it also was what affected the jurors most. They felt that some of those text messages between you and Alex were some of the most damning evidence in this.
Is that what they're saying now?
That's what they're saying now. So how do you describe the Nephi texts?
So, yeah, they've been totally and completely misconstrued. So I explained that somewhat in my closing. You know, that's their job. So the prosecution, the state, they're not there. Right? They receive all this information and then they make up a story that goes along with whatever information that they have, right? They make it up. It's a made up story. They weren't there, they didn't experience it, so they have no idea. They have to make up a story and then they have to stick to it. And then they put that out to the media and then they put their narrative out and then they stick to their narrative. So you've heard this for 5 years, but it's very misconstrued.
So what is it?
So when you're speaking spiritually to someone else who understands spiritual things, so say Chad, for instance, right? Mm-hmm. Chad had a near-death experience. He's had three, actually. I had a near-death experience. We both went to heaven. We both had that experience. So what bonded us is it's a very lonely place to have that kind of knowledge and have no one to talk to about it in your life that understands that. And so when someone else understands that and you're speaking spiritually, we weren't speaking of anything on earth. We weren't speaking of anything that was happening here. We're speaking of things that are happening in the spirit world. So anybody that's going to read any text of yours, it's going to be way over their head in the sense that they hadn't had those experiences, so they have nowhere to put them.
So what does be like Nephi mean?
Be courageous, be brave, have perseverance.
And why did you have to be brave in that situation? What were you referencing then to be brave about?
So Adam and Charles and Brandon were plotting against me. My sister was worried about it. My mom was telling me about it. I didn't really realize it. I was in the middle of taking care of kids with special needs, a daughter with chronic illness, and a son with special needs. So if you know anything about kids with autism, it's 24 hours a day. And I was busy mom. They were like, oh, this is weird. Adam came into town and he's with Charles and you haven't talked to him and we need to let you know there's something going on. Maybe you could come stay at my house. You know, my sister had that whole thing is come stay at my house. I can't pick up JJ and go stay at someone else's house. It ruins his routine.
So you were referring to the intervention.
what they call an intervention. Now, I don't believe that's what it was at all.
What did you believe
I
it was?
I think they have other plans completely.
So when Charles died, why did you guys wait 47 minutes to call 911? That became a huge part
of this. I didn't wait any time.
Well, I guess you didn't call at all. Because Alex called.
That's right. It was his responsibility in my mind that he took over and was handling that situation. I was getting the kids out of danger.
Do you think he should have called sooner?
Absolutely.
You do?
Yeah. You do. I think he probably freaked out. You know, Charles and Alex were friends for years. Like, Alex lived with us for like 6 months in 2018, like, and he and Charles would hang out all weekend and they'd go do stuff together. And Charles loved Alex and Alex loved Charles. Like, this just happened this day the way that it happened, and it was a tragedy. You know, Alex was probably freaked out as I was of the whole situation. So I don't know why he did what he did, and you know, he's not here for me to ask him anymore.
Do you regret
Oh, that's a creepy way of saying it.
No.
Right?
No. Why?
It's for the same reasons I told you before about getting a speedy trial. Mm-hmm. I'm doing that for all the women in here that have been sitting here for so many years, you know. And I told you, like, I wouldn't expect attorneys to be able to do that. They want more time, you know. So, you know, I'll continue to go through the motions. And, you know, we have another trial coming up in a couple of weeks. We have lots to do for that trial and preparing and getting ready. And maybe some of those things will be cleared up in this trial. You know, they filed a motion that they're going to bring in everything now.
Yeah,
and
I saw that.
And so if the judge allows that, which...
Who knows?
What do you think he's going to do?
Well, yeah, I mean, we don't know.
You tell me what you think he's going to do, Brianna. Yeah, well, you think he's going to say, nope, no 404B, we're not going to let any of that stuff in? I mean...
The judge was relatively patient with you, I thought, throughout the trial.
Did you?
Well, no, I think he was helping you. One more. Given that you were just found guilty, and I know you don't like the jail conditions, would you change your plea in Brandon's trial?
No.
Why?
Will I change it? No, because I didn't do anything. So no, you have to, there comes a point when you just have to stand up, regardless of what they do to you, right? Like, mm-hmm. This will have zero effect on me in eternity. Zero effect on me in eternity. And I already know that. So I'm here to help whatever women I can help in here be courageous and stand up for themselves, because it's a system that bogs you down. These women are bogged down. They've been here for years. They've been treated horrible in this situation, and they've been treated horrible by their own attorneys. You know, they've been treated like, okay, they've been here for 8, 9, 10 years waiting to go to trial when the conditions at the prison, even if they got convicted, are a million times better than they are right here. So I'm helping them to stand up and be courageous. You know, if you didn't do it, you just get up and say you didn't do it. If they convict you because that's the way the law works, then they're going to convict you because that's the way the law works. It is designed to convict you. It is not designed to acquit you. And I want you to look this up, and I want you to tell me next time we talk how many people in Maricopa County in a murder case get acquitted. I want to know the percentage acquitted.
I'll look it up.
Because I bet you it's like less than 1%.
It's not often that we see it. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate your time.
There you go.
Wow. All right, then.
33 and new this morning. ABC 15 is getting brand new insight.
Turn that off.
You know, it wasn't open mic night at the asylum. I mean, it's like that's what she wanted in the courtroom. Like,
you know,
she's
works.
Trying to play the blame game.
Well, you don't get acquitted when you're clearly guilty. I mean, there's so much evidence against her. At the very end, I think the closing from the prosecution, the very, very end closing, that right after Lori went and they had a chance to rebut, that's what I think sealed the deal. Because that was a really good closing from her. The attorney for the state, I thought was kind of, like, her facts were good. I just didn't think she was that compelling until that moment. Then it's like, she's just speaking, you know, unscripted here. And she laid it out really well. And I think that's really what pushed it over the edge. But I thought she had a chance. I think she still has a chance in the next one. Quite honest, I got to look at all the facts in the next one. But
do you think she's got a chance of an appeal?
Well, what's the point? I mean, like an appeal on her kids?
She's playing the system, Tony. She wants to be.
I don't think she has a chance at an appeal on her death of her kids. No, I think that's said and done and that's over. So she's in prison for life. At this point, it's just wasting time and money because.
But they're allowing her to do that.
It'll run out. The clock will run out at some point. There's only so many appeals you can get. And, you know, are there grounds for it? No, I think the judge in this case was very careful to make sure that he yes. held her with kid gloves so they would not have any grounds for appeal because he did not want to have to go through this again or I think make anybody go through this again.
So, no, I think he was far too lenient with her. He held her hand many times.
But that's why he did it. Because he didn't want to, because he knew at the end of the day she's going to sink her own boat. Yep. So again, he was far too lenient with her, but it was Lori, and we all know how nuts she is. So again, I just think he did it of let's not give this woman a chance to appeal. Let's give her every opportunity, even shut her up several times when she was about to bring the kids into it.
Yeah.
And it's funny how she talks about, like, we weren't allowed to talk about the kids. No, you didn't want to talk about the kids. It wasn't you weren't allowed to. Everyone was waiting for you to do it. So then it could be all brought into this case. But she didn't step over those bounds. It's interesting she thought that she wasn't allowed to.
I can't believe that there was nobody on that jury that knew that those kids were dead.
We don't know that. I mean.
Right. Exactly. We don't know that. They may have said that they didn't know or, mm-hmm. Details leak out. This was such a big story.
Yeah.
I'm sure everybody on that jury had heard something.
Well, look, this delusion that so many people have of, the jury is not going to be looking at news when they get home and all that bullshit. Like,
into our cell phones. We sit on the toilet and we scroll. We're gonna see something, especially a humongous case like this in your area. You're gonna see something. There's gonna be people on Facebook, Instagram, all of the social media sites.
Yeah,
somebody's gonna say something and you'll glance at it.
Yeah,
unless you lock yourself in. Well, unless you're sequestered.
That's the only way.
You are not going to avoid it.
And it wasn't a sequestered jury.
No.
So, no. I mean, look, it's human nature. They're not supposed to, do they? You fucking bet they do.
Lying in bed with your significant other and somebody says something and you roll over and go, yeah, lady's nuts.
I don't think you just talked
about it.
Well, even that, I mean, it's not even like you accidentally do it. People are intentional. They're looking this shit up. They want to know what's going on. What is this person about? Especially her, when you're like, what the hell's wrong with this person? I bet they all Googled her. So it was going to happen the way it was going to happen, but there you go. Lori Vallow Daybell.
And we get to see her again in a couple of weeks.
I can hardly wait.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. She was a doting mother, the kind who baked cookies, made the best homemade Halloween costumes, and never missed a PTA meeting. The perfect mom. Until the police found something buried in the backyard. A secret she kept for years. A secret she thought would never come to light. The neighbors gasped. Not her. She's so nice. But people forget. Monsters don't always look like monsters. Some wear aprons. Some tuck their kids in at night. And some hide their darkest deeds in places they think no one will ever look. If only someone had heard the warning signs, had recognized the patterns from an eerily similar case on Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. If they had only subscribed to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts, they could have listened ad-free before anyone else and saved themselves from baking cookies with a serial killer. Instead, they won't be RSVP to this year's PTA meeting. Subscribe now to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts.
normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something. But I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government. The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people. It involves looking through lots and lots of documents. And if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public will be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too, because where you get your information matters.